Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. So welcome to part two of this two-part, maybe even three-part, I don't know yet, episode about what is Britishness. And what I'm trying to do with these episodes is just try and look at what are the real elements of British culture? What do, let's say, how do foreign people understand Britain? And how is that different to the way in which British people define their national identity? And also, generally speaking, how do you define a national identity? And what are the issues that and considerations that go along with that idea? In part one, we looked at some of the things that I've noticed my students and many other foreign people I've met say and think about Britain and how they define Britishness from a sort of outsider's point of view. And I kind of, you know, talked a little bit about those ideas. In this one, we're going to continue and actually look at how British people define Britishness. Okay, so when you actually ask the average British person to define Britishness, I find that they always give certain stock answers to this question too. So we've got the kind of cliches and stereotypes that come from non-British people, but also British people have their own kind of quick answers to this question as well. As we know, it's very hard to truly define this concept. So you end up listing various associations which don't fully deal with the whole subject in a satisfyingly complete way. Now, a way to kind of begin looking at this is to listen to some comments by like ordinary people in the street. And I found a video on YouTube which is called What is Britishness by Rebecca Devaraj. And it's a short video exploring Britishness for her final year university project. And it looks like she spent the morning in a local park. I think it's London. Just looking at the scenes, I think I recognise some places. It might even be Ealing. Anyway, so she spent some time in a local park asking passers-by the question, what is Britishness? So let's listen to the audio. And I wonder if you can guess which of the answers you're going to hear is the one that I think is the best. So you'll hear a number of answers. Which one is the one that I think is the best answer, in my opinion? I mean, there's no real right or wrong answer to this question, but I think one of them is slightly more incisive and goes into a bit more depth. Can you guess which answer that is? Here we go.
British spirit, it's about always having a stiff upper lip, keeping going whatever the situation is. That's what being British is.
I think being British is having a stiff upper lip because we get on with things.
Diversity, culture, fish and chips.
I would have thought that Britishness defines the characteristics of whoever are the citizens of Britain, whatever their origins at any one time. Ordinarily, we would argue that Britishness is linked to notions of liberty and freedom, and in fact, the very diversity that makes it difficult to define what Britishness means.
I think being British is being accepting. We accepted the smoking ban, we accept the weather, we accept queuing, we just accept and get on with it.
A big part of Britain is bulldogs because obviously it has the connotations with church and with the advert and lots of things, and they're British.
Yay! I think being British is being cosmopolitan in modern society.
When I think of Britain, I think of bad weather, permanent winter, and that kind of leads to, the tolerance we have in the UK, which I think is pretty much a British trait.
Tolerance is the one we think about, but I think it's also a long history of progress, because society has gotten better with each generation. People's homes, their lives have improved, their social conditions have and we're striving to make them better.
I think being British is, well, because I think about my stomach and I was thinking fish and chips.
We think being British is about weather and bad weather, but obviously not like today.
I think Britain is all about tradition because that's what we've got a lot of.
We think being British is about being patriotic because we get behind our sports teams and support our country and the royal family.
And you just feel it. You just are British.
Okay, so there are some sort of vox pops about what some British people think defines them as British people. And so let's have a quick look at some vocabulary that you heard in that series of short interviews there. And so we're going to see. First of all, you heard the expression having a stiff upper lip and getting on with things. Having a stiff upper lip. Have you heard that before? I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before. British people often say about themselves that they have a stiff upper lip. So this just basically means having a sort of emotional resolve, having a bit of toughness and not losing control emotionally, not getting over emotional, right? So the upper lip is, well, obviously you've got two lips. And the lip on the top is your upper lip. And if that is stiff, it means it's not trembling. It means you've got your emotions under control. Okay, so that's what having a stiff upper lip means. And then also just getting on with things. If you just get on with things, it means you just carry on. It's, you know, it's basically just keep calm and carry on, isn't it? So despite problems or troubles that you might be experiencing, you don't let it prevent you from getting things done, or it doesn't stop you from continuing to do things. So it's about keeping calm and carrying on, right? You also will have heard there being accepting. So that just means accepting situations and just getting on with it. So being accepting, that's interesting because in, you know, many countries, people, well, they don't put up with things. They don't put up with problems. I mean, obvious example here in France. Let's say if the government announces that they're going to raise the age of retirement, meaning that everyone has to work longer and they can't retire at 65, they have to wait until they're 70. So if the government raises the age of retirement in France, people wouldn't just accept it. They'd take to the streets, they'd be demonstrating and protesting against it, right? In England, if the government decided to raise the age of retirement, people would probably just have a cup of tea and complain about it, but sort of accept it, probably. Although, obviously, there would be some people demonstrating in the streets, but you get the idea. Another thing you heard there was the bulldog. Bulldog is just a breed of dog. You might know it's kind of fairly small, and it's got these sort of jowls on its face, these jowls that make it look a bit like Winston Churchill. So we associate Winston Churchill with the bulldog. And of course, Winston Churchill is a sort of national hero because of the way he led Britain during World War II. So we associate Churchill with strong leadership and someone who allowed, you know, who helped us to avoid losing the war, let's say. Bad weather, torrents. You might be thinking, what's a torrent? Well, a torrent basically means, normally we say torrents of rain. This just means sort of like heavy showers of rain. Okay, those are torrents. Progress, you heard. We get behind our sports teams. If you get behind someone, it means you support them. Okay, to be behind someone, I'm behind you. To get behind someone, in this case, get behind a sports team, means that you support your sports team. And then finally, one of the women said, you just are British, which is kind of, that's kind of it, really. If you're British, if you live in Britain, then you, whatever you do helps to define what Britishness actually is. So what was the best comment? Which one do you think I think is the best comment? Well, for me, it's the guy who says, and he's not just a guy. In fact, he's called Professor Jeremy Black, the author of A Short History of Britain, which is obviously a book about the history of Britain. Professor Jeremy Black, he's a professor and an author, so he should know what he's talking about. And he says this, I would have thought that Britishness defines the characteristics of whoever are the citizens of Britain. Now, he said Britishness defines the citizens, but I think actually, I may be wrong, maybe this is inappropriate of me to correct a professor, but I think he means that the citizens define Britishness. So whoever the citizens of Britain are at that moment, whatever they do, that defines Britishness. Or maybe he means it the other way round, that somehow Britishness as a concept defines who we are. I think it's probably a combination of the two somehow. So I would have thought that Britishness defines the characteristics of whoever are the citizens of Britain, whatever their origins, at any one time. So it doesn't matter where you come from, if you're a citizen of Britain, then you're defining what Britishness is. And that includes, you know, people from like ethnic communities and immigrant families who have settled in the UK. Ordinarily, and he goes on to say, ordinarily, we would argue that Britishness is linked to notions of liberty and freedom, and in fact, the very diversity that makes it difficult to define what Britishness means. So there you see the couple of values, liberty and freedom. Somehow this is important, although, of course, freedom is a, I think it's not possible to have absolute freedom because there are always limitations of some kind. But certainly the sense that there's freedom to be who you want to be, you know, democracy and freedom to start your own business, that kind of economic liberty as well, and diversity. I think generally in Britain, we're quite proud of our diversity. Here's a Wikipedia definition of Britishness, and it goes like this. Britishness is the state or quality of being British, of course, or of embodying British characteristics, and is used to refer to that which binds and distinguishes the British people and forms the basis of their unity and identity, or else to explain expressions of British culture, such as habits, behaviours, or symbols that have a common, familiar, or iconic quality readily identifiable with the United Kingdom. Dialogue about the legitimacy and authenticity of Britishness is intrinsically tied with power relations and politics. In terms of nationhood and belonging, expressing or recognizing one's Britishness provokes a range of responses and attitudes, such as advocacy, indifference, or rejection. McPhee and Poddar state that although the designation of the two differing terms, despite the designation of the two differing terms, Britishness and Englishness, despite the fact that it's not simple, as they are invariably conflated, they're slightly different, they are both tied into the identity of the British Empire and nation, since these last two are altering considerably, as Englishness and Britishness do too. Thus, the slippage between the two words, British and English, can be seen as a play between these changing dynamics. Right, that's interesting and also a little complex. So here's my sort of simplified version of that. So Britishness is, according to that definition, whatever distinguishes British people and culture from other nations. So whatever is unique to the UK. It also includes habits, behaviours or symbols that are specific or familiar to the UK. And this sort of confirms many of the things that we've already said. It's those images and values and stuff that are uniquely British. This conversation usually ends up with references to the power structure of the UK, politics and monarchy. Expressing Britishness provokes a range of feelings. For example, waving a British flag, a UK flag, might cause people in the UK to go, yay, or to go, yeah, whatever, or to go, I find that offensive. So it either can provoke advocacy, like support, or indifference, like, yeah, whatever, I don't care, or rejection, which is like, no, I find that offensive. And also, Britishness and Englishness are different things, but they're often used to mean the same thing, which is basically Britain from an international point of view, especially as an empire. So just relating to that last point about the difference between Britishness and Englishness, also the possibility of how waving a British flag could be offensive, what is the difference between Britain and England? Well, and also Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, of course. And why would it be offensive to wave a British flag? Well, you know the difference between England and Britain. of course, they're, you know, England. I've explained it already, right? England, the country, Britain, the landmass that includes Scotland and Wales, and also the UK when you include Northern Ireland. But about the flags, generally, actually, in England, it's less offensive to wave a British flag. People tend to be quite comfortable about the British flag, the UK flag in England. But in Scotland, Wales, or Northern Ireland, you might meet people who put their countries before the union of the UK, and in fact feel that the UK was even forced on them in some way. So you might find that, you know, independently minded Scots or Northern Irish or Welsh people might not like the British flag so much. But what about the English flag? What does that mean in England? Well, in England, the UK flag, the Union Jack, the red, white and blue one, is associated with unity, inclusion, multiculturalism, and so on, because it obviously represents the unity of the four nations. So it sort of includes those ideas of inclusion and multiculturalism and acceptance. But the English flag on its own, which is white with a red cross on it, that's more associated with English nationalism, which in turn is associated with empire building, colonialization, and also football hooligans. So there is a sense that the English flag on its own is associated with slightly more ugly values than the British or UK flag. I think also the UK flag is it's slightly more attractive as a flag, isn't it? And it's also quite cool. I mean, internationally, it's sort of seen as almost associated with fashion and music. You see bands like The Who or the Oasis, who played guitars with a Union Jack on them, and also, you know, certain aspects of the fashion scene, that flag. So generally, the English flag is displayed, you might find, when there's a football match, and it kind of relates to the behaviour that goes along with that. So can you see the difference? So going back to the idea of how Brits define Britishness, this Guardian article sums it up rather well. And this is an article from The Guardian, and I'm going to read it to you now. You can find a link to this on the webpage for this episode. So let's have a look. This article was published last summer in 2014, ahead of the Scottish referendum. The Scottish referendum sort of opened up this conversation on what is Britishness. It's written by James Walsh for The Guardian, and I'm going to read it to you now. So, let's not make a fuss. 10 things that sum up Britishness. With a vote on Scottish independence only 100 days away, we asked our readers across the United Kingdom what Britishness means to them. The answer is, as expected, a complex one. Here are 10 themes that emerged. So it's an interesting time to be British. With Scotland 100 days away from a vote on independence, the term could be due a radical overhaul. An overhaul, by the way, is like a redesign when you change something. So we thought it would be worth finding out what our readers thought of Britishness, regardless of which corner of the United Kingdom they called home. As was to be expected, we received a multitude of different answers, but clear themes emerged, and here are 10 of the most notable. You can add your own thoughts on British identity via our Guardian witness assignment or in the comments thread below. So, number one, it's an inclusive term. Inclusion. To include is the verb. It's an inclusive term. If one positive theme emerged from our call out, it's that our readers see Britishness as an inclusive umbrella term to cover a multitude of backgrounds. This photo above, and you can see a photograph of a marriage, a multicultural marriage between, I believe it's an Indian person and a Scottish person. It says, this photo is the moment we married. My children have Scotland, Wales, Iraq, India, Pakistan and Zanzibar in their blood. We live in Croydon and our family extends to every inhabited continent on the planet. Our friends are from all points of the compass. We are global and local in one room. Whether you look at the British Empire with shame or anger or pride, this is what it does for us now. It's our history that drew us together, and it shapes our Britain. We are Indo-Scots, Presbyterian Muslims. We are London, and like Tom Jones, we're not unusual. It's not unusual, apparently, to be so multicultural.
It's not unusual.
It's not unusual, apparently. That's the Tom Jones reference. You know that song, don't you? It's not unusual. So where were we? Where's the article gone on my computer? There it is. So so this multiculturalism is not unusual, apparently. And that is from someone calling themselves Green Desk Bruce. Here's another one from Steph Worthington. And it says, I'm Welsh, but I've been living in England for nearly 30 years. I don't see a problem with regarding myself as Welsh and British. My concern is, if countries go independent, will those who have come from abroad feel pushed out of society? I know an Asian restaurant worker who doesn't feel English at all, but does feel British, yet he's only ever lived in England. British is a helpful catch-all term for all of us, especially those who don't feel English, Welsh, Cornish, Northern Irish, or Scottish. Number two in this Guardian article is that it can be quite confusing. The author goes on to say, first time I went to America, I wrote English as my nationality on my visa waiver form. This was wrong. It turns out I'm United Kingdomese. And here's another comment from John B. And it says, when someone abroad asks, where are you from? Do you say I'm British, a UK citizen from Great Britain, English, Scottish, Welsh, Northern Irish, or from the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland? Do you then try to explain that the Great refers to the largest island and is not really a delusion of grandeur? Multiculturalism is fine, but we do have... But multiculturalism is fine, but we do... There's a mistake on the Guardian article. That's why I'm having problems with that sentence. Multiculturalism is fine, but do we have any shared culture? Okay. That's John B. Here's another one from Hezzy Chust. All right. If my cultural identity were an ice cream, European would be the cone that holds it. The ice cream would be British Isles flavour, and the sprinkles would be English, Lancastrian, Blackpudlian. Okay, an interesting ice cream analogy there. I like that one, naturally. Number three in this list is that its meaning needs to be updated. And a comment from I Am Not Prince Hamlet says, where Nigel Farage might fulminate at this proliferation of Polish cured meats in my local corner shop, I see exciting diversity. Here's to multicultural Britain. Nigel Farage, by the way, is kind of a... he's the leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party, known as UKIP. And UKIP's policy... Well, UKIP want two things, really. The first thing they want is to get the UK out of Europe. And the second thing they want is to get the immigrants out of the UK. So, you know, they're kind of a right-wing party led by Nigel Farage. And it, the comment says, where Nigel Farage might fulminate at this proliferation of Polish cured meats in my local corner shop, there's a picture of some local Polish cured meats in a shop. And that might make Nigel Farage angry, because Nigel Farage would say that, you know, British culture is being swamped by cultures from abroad and we're losing our identity. So the Polish meats might make him angry. But for I Am Not Prince Hamlet, this is exciting diversity. And so here's to multicultural Britain. If you say here's to something... It's like you're saying cheers, you know, you're lifting a glass. Here's to multicultural Britain. Here's another comment, and it's from Allied Lama, which is quite interesting. It sounds like Dalai Lama, doesn't it? But it's Allied Lama. As a group of nations under the British state, I think we need to do more to celebrate our multiculturalism, not just in the conciliatory nods that the press sometimes give to the many different ethnic identities of London, but across the whole of our four different nations. In Wales, Scotland and Ireland, we could do more to explore our Celtic heritages, while also admitting that as part of the British state, we've become cosmopolitan nations with several linguistic heritages where people from all over the world have travelled to. We can share in the different ways of life that immigrating peoples bring to us, not shut them out in anxiety. Okay, so point four goes like this. British shouldn't just mean English. And we see a picture of a Cockney pearly king. This is a kind of a old school, traditional old-fashioned Cockney wearing the traditional old-fashioned Cockney clothing. If you remember from the episode called On a Boat, my friend Paul Langton explained that a Cockney technically is someone who is born within the sound of Bow Bells. Bow is an area of East London. So Cockneys only come from a very specific part of East London, in fact. So you see, we see a picture of a proud Cockney standing in front of the Union Jack. British and English are sometimes seen as interchangeable to the chagrin, that's like annoyance or anger, to the chagrin of some of our readers, particularly this one from Northern Ireland. Too often, English people... Shall I do this in a Northern Irish accent, or would that be inappropriate? Too often, English people... And I say that... No, I'm not going to do it. Too often, English people... I say this living happily in Liverpool, loving all my English friends, tend to believe that English equals British. Too many times, an English person has been talking to me and casually mentioned, I guess that's me being British, without a hint of thinking that we are talking to, without a hint of thinking he was talking to someone British. They mean English. Too often I have actually been asked if Belfast is in Ireland or in Scotland. It is ignorant. It's unfair to feel that I'm not entitled to my own Britishness when in the company of English people. But that said, this doesn't have to be a problem. A little education would go a long way. I'm British, I just need you to see me that way. Okay, so what we're talking about here is that Britishness needs to be expanded, not, you know, it's not fair on the Welsh, the Scottish and the Irish when we say Britishness, but we actually mean Englishness. We need to try and include those three we should include those three other nations somehow into a broader meaning. That was from Jennifer Fisher, who's from Northern Ireland. This one is another one from Allied Lama, and it says, unfortunately, Britishness is often construed by the media as being terribly Anglo-centric, and I fear not even a kind of Anglo-centric that many English people can easily identify with, as it focuses on a narrow stereotype imagined by the disconnected bourgeois who mainly seclude themselves along certain stretches of the Thames Valley and the South Coast. The inherent pride in a long-lost empire, the stubborn boasts of achievements in sciences and the arts, the pretense that we are still a major world power, all of these things are what I feel people are told they should be proud of and feel connected to in being British. So Allied Lama there is again stating that Britishness is defined only by a small section of society, particularly those who live in London, basically. So are you okay? You're keeping up with this, everyone? All right, let's carry on. So this is point five in what is a 10-point list, isn't it? Isn't that what I said? So number five is Englishness needs to be reappropriated. Englishness needs to be reappropriated. And we see a picture of the folk singer, the English folk singer, Billy Bragg, who is kind of a proponent of Englishness and in somehow reinstating Englishness or redefining, reassessing Englishness. Okay, so let me continue reading the article. I say let me continue reading as if you're stopping me. All right, there's nothing stopping me, is there? No, of course not. No. So if Scotland votes for independence, which they didn't anyway, if Scotland votes for independence, will Englishness have to be reassessed? Obviously, there will be political repercussions and machinations, but some of our readers feel Englishness itself will need to be revalued and redefined. Repercussions? You know what that means? It's basically effects or consequences. Machinations, these are like changes, okay? Machinations, it's like the operations of a machine. So in this case, the machine would be, let's say, the constitution of the UK, the unwritten constitution of the UK. So there would have to be changes to the machine of Britain. Huh? Okay, so there will have to be political repercussions and machinations, but some of our readers feel Englishness itself will need to be revalued and redefined. And this is from someone called Rika Boy. And it goes like this. I think that one of the things that drove me away from Britishness is the fact that England seems to be the Cinderella of the UK nations. It's true that it dominates the UK in terms of size and influence, yet it is the only home nation that's not allowed its own devolved parliament or assembly, whereas the Welsh, Scots and Northern Irish have considerable powers to manage their own affairs. England is ruled firmly by the British government for the sole good of the UK state. I believe that Englishness should be a positive identity which is embraced and celebrated, yet too many English people still seem religiously devoted to a Britishness which seems to want to expunge Englishness as a nasty, dangerous anachronism. Whoa. Remember that you can access this article by clicking the link that you'll find on the page for this episode. And then you can actually see all these words. You can Google them. You can do a bit of studying if that's what you want to do. Point six goes like this. You can be proud to be British without being right wing. And we see a picture of some bunting. Bunting is like decorative flags which are put up whenever we celebrate something in Britain. Like, for example, the royal marriage, there was lots of bunting. Usually like little triangular flags on strings or ropes. And you often see them at street parties and things like that. So there's a picture of bunting. And this is how it goes. Perhaps unsurprisingly, this being The Guardian, there weren't too many mentions of the Queen, although there was one mention of the Queen. So do you know what that means? The Guardian is generally quite a left-wing newspaper. Not radically left-wing or anything, but it leans to the left. And so because of that, people are not overly patriotic, and they're not necessarily overly fond of the monarchy. Okay, so that's what that means. So let me read it again. Perhaps as if you're blocking me, like as if you're slapping the computer out of my hand or something. Of course you're not. Anyway, perhaps unsurprisingly, this being The Guardian, there weren't too many mentions of the Queen. But it was interesting to hear from British patriots a million miles away from the UKIP mould. This means that it's interesting to hear from British patriots who are not right wing. I love this. This is from Stephanie Keeler, and it says, I love our warm-hearted, philanthropic, quirky and socialist past. I'm proud of the Chartists and the Suffragettes, Charles Dickens, Robert Owen and John Ball. I'm proud of the unions. I'm proud that we raised stiff opposition to Thatcher and of our ability to unite in the Second World War against fascism. I'm proud that we executed a king because we valued our rights, privileges and liberties more than monarchic tradition. I'm proud that we still slam the door of Parliament in the face of the Queen's messenger to this very day. Wow, there's so much in that comment that you might not know about. Let's have a look at the second part. I'm proud that we executed a king. King Charles I, this is in the mid-17th century, there was an uprising by Parliament. So very brief history, okay? Very, very brief history lesson, but it's a key moment in British history. For years and years, the monarch had power, like let's say supreme power, that they were the main executive power in the country. And then in the 17th century, there was a parliament who the king basically delegated powers to to run the country, but the king still maintained supreme power. But the parliament gained more and more power, led by Oliver Cromwell, who you might have heard of, and there was an uprising by parliament after the King Charles attempted to impose too much of his will on parliament. Parliament fought back. There was a civil war between the parliamentarians, led by Oliver Cromwell, and the monarchists. So the parliamentarians versus the monarchy, basically. The parliamentarians won. The king was killed. They chopped his head off. And for, how long was it? Something like 20 years, I think. We had a sort of republic led by Oliver Cromwell as a dictator, basically. They didn't call it a republic. They called it the English Commonwealth. But then after Cromwell died, I mean, his son took over. But ultimately, the royal family came back and Charles I's son was reinstated as the monarch. He became Charles II, of course. But that was a key moment because it sort of opened the door to various other changes that happened later on, which led to basically the parliament running the show and the monarch not having powers. So this this person, Stephanie Keeler, is proud of that moment, that we valued our rights, privileges and liberties more than monarchic tradition. And then she said, "I'm proud that we still slam the door of Parliament in the face of the Queen's messenger." This refers to when the Queen opens Parliament every year. Every year when Parliament is opened, officially it's opened by the Queen. But the thing is, the Queen can't enter Parliament. Since Charles I was beheaded, the monarch is not allowed into Parliament. And so she has to send a messenger to knock on the door to request, to ask Parliament to be opened. And there's this routine where the messenger, who's known as Black Rod, walks through the building and he knocks on the door of Parliament. And in Parliament, they refuse to let him in and he knocks again. And then finally they let him in and then Parliament is opened. It's a very old tradition. So there's still that sense that Parliament managed to seize power away from the monarch in order to, focus on democratic running of the country, right? Okay, right, are you okay? You still focusing on this? I understand it's a bit, what's the word for it? It's a bit dense, a bit thick, isn't it? Well, I mean, it's a bit complex. I hope you're still listening. There will be music, by the way, coming up. I'm going to play you some Billy Bragg. That'll be nice because he's just brilliant. Really great songwriter and musician. So we're still on points. We're now on point seven. And that's that British people consider that Britishness means tolerance. And we have a picture of some slippers with the Union Jack and some hearts on them. And this is from Bobalob, and it says, "For me, the feeling of being British represents tolerance, even the embracing of different cultures, ways of life, and opinions, as the definition evolves along with the people who live here. I feel very lucky to be living in such a nation with the freedoms and opportunities we have." And then Absolute Beginner makes this comment, there have always been four things that have made me proud of living in Britain: a strong welfare state, the fact that we do not have capital punishment, the fact that we do not have a national health service, the fact that we do not have national service, that means being obliged to join the army for a time, and a welcoming attitude to those from outside Britain. From the Huguenots to Windrush, long may those values continue. So proud of welcoming immigrants into the country. That means number eight, but some worry Britain no longer upholds these values. And we've got a picture of three gentlemen in suits and bowler hats with umbrellas. It's an old picture from the 1960s, gentlemen in the rain. But maybe the gentleman, that proud image of the gentleman, is lost now. This is a comment from Jean McKenzie. And it says this: "When I grew up in the 1960s, there was a sense of progress, of everything getting better, if slowly, for all the people, of everyone working together for the common good and looking after the vulnerable, of helping working class children into higher education, a free health service and decent housing for all. Since 1979, these advances have gone into reverse, and the dominant ideology is of individual greed, exploitation of others, and scapegoating people and groups. Since 1979. Why? Because that's when Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister. Okay? So, individual greed, exploitation of others, and scapegoating people and groups. Scapegoating, if you scapegoat someone, or you make someone a scapegoat, it means that you blame them for all the problems. You just put all the problems on one person, so they become the scapegoat. You just blame them for all the problems, even if they're not necessarily responsible. They just become the one who gets blamed for everything. So maybe Thatcher changed Britain's values in some way. Point nine, some would rather just not make a fuss. All right, to make a fuss means to make lots of trouble, to make an inconvenient situation somehow, arguing or somehow making life difficult. That means to make a fuss. For example, in a restaurant, you might find an English couple sitting down at a restaurant, and one of them's got a dirty fork, and he doesn't want to make a fuss. So instead of complaining about it, he just cleans it himself. And then when the waiter comes over and says, "Is everything okay?" they go, "Yeah, everything's fine," even though the fork was dirty. That he didn't complain about it, he just didn't want to make a fuss. There's actually a very good Monty Python comedy sketch about that exact situation, which I must play to you at some point. So, some people would rather not make a fuss. We also received our fair share of flippant, if witty, replies. For some, questions of identity just aren't that important. Flippant means sort of like, you know, not very serious. And a bit of a joke, a bit jokey. This is something, a comment from Really an Avatar, and it says, "Being English, and to a lesser extent British, means having no wish to loudly proclaim my Englishness." So there you go, being English or British is all about not really wanting to be proud to be English. That's interesting. I think that's really quite insightful, that one. And Beggar's Belief said, if something beggars belief, it means you can't believe it. It absolutely beggars belief, meaning I cannot believe it. It's not that complicated, says Beggar's Belief. If you want to broaden your identity, you'd probably say that you were European, or maybe from the Northern Hemisphere, or from the Earth, solar system, Milky Way, universe, space, that sort of thing. If you wanted to narrow it down a bit to something a bit more manageable that makes you feel comfortable or irrationally excited, you'd say, "I'm English, mate," or "Scottish, Welsh, or Irish." If you narrowed it down further, you might say you were from, say, Worcestershire or Worcester. Like the both places, Worcestershire is a county, Worcester is a town within Worcestershire. If you wanted the postman or woman to identify you, you might like to give your address. So it's just a flippant, sarcastic response, saying that it's all a bit unnecessary to be overly proud of where you come from, that it's a bit meaningless, really. I kind of agree with that, I have to say. Number 10, and this is the final point. If there's nothing else we can agree on, there's always Philip Larkin outside a library with a bicycle. And we see a picture of the poet, Philip Larkin, a popular English poet. I'm pretty sure he's English. A photo of Philip Larkin, a black and white photo of him standing outside a library with a bicycle. And it somehow sums up some of the values that we like. You know, the literary things, the just certain comforting images of Britain. So positive British stereotypes mentioned by our readers included eccentricity, having a sense of fair play, and a mastery of ironic humour. But one reader, when asked to define Britishness, simply replied, "Philip Larkin, outside a library with a bicycle." So that is the Guardian article about Britishness. And to be honest, I think that pretty much covers the whole thing. I do have other things to say. I'm going to carry on. What time is it on the podcast? Okay, we've been going for about 43 minutes. I did have something to say about the Scots, the Welsh, and the Northern Irish. I think that's been covered, to be honest, by the comments. Let me just read it to you anyway. It's only a short piece of text. So, back to me again. I'm English and British, so when I talk about Britishness, I'm also talking about Englishness to a certain extent, but Britain also... Wait a minute. I've got a funny feeling, ladies and gentlemen, that you're getting a bit tired of all this Britishness. Am I right? Am I right, ladies and gentlemen? You might be thinking, okay, we got it, Luke. It's complicated. It's fine. I think that's what you're thinking. Let me just give you a really quick list of the things I'm proud of, okay? I'm proud of the fairness, or the sense of fairness. Cricket. I love cricket. The game of cricket, which you probably don't understand. I love our humour, of course. I love our music. I've talked about that. The comedy, as you know. The land itself, I just love the landscape. It's very green, and it's a, you know, there's some beautiful countryside. I love the diverse accents that we have, as you well know. The NHS, the National Health Service. Sherlock Holmes, drinking tea with milk. Thank you very much, the proper way. I love pretending to be proudly British. Because for me, it's just like I can't really be sincere when I make all these statements about being proudly British, because it's not that important to me. So if you ever hear me on the podcast making proud statements about drinking tea and, you know, having a portrait of the Queen and stuff, I'm not really being serious. I'm just trying to, I'm sort of undermining the seriousness of it, really. That's British humour, maybe. It's hard to identify, but that's what it is. I love pubs. I love towns where I've lived. London, Birmingham, Liverpool. I love J.R.R. Tolkien, The Lord of the Rings, Monty Python, Ali G. I could go on. I'm not going to. Instead, what I'm going to do is play you some Billy Bragg. It's not me playing it. I'm going to play you a video of his that I found on YouTube. I hope that he doesn't mind. If Billy Bragg does mind, then he can just get in touch with me. I'm a reasonable man and I can remove this if he wants me to, but I'm going to play it to you anyway. So let's see. I'm going to play this song by Billy Bragg, and it's called England Half English. Let me just read through the lyrics to you first. So it goes like this: my mother was half English and I'm half English too. I'm a great big bundle of culture tied up in the red, white and blue. I'm a fine example of your Essex man, and I'm well familiar with the Hindustan. That, by the way, that's an Indian English language newspaper. Because my neighbours are half English and I'm half English too. All right, so it's about multiculturalism and being proud that being English means being a sort of mongrel, a mix of different things. He's proud that his neighbours are Indian, and he's well aware of the Indian newspaper, the Hindustan. This is going to sound much better when he sings it. My breakfast was half English, and so am I, you know. I had a plate of Marmite soldiers, washed down with a cappuccino. Soldiers means bits of toast cut into strips, and you dip them into a boiled egg. So I had a plate of Marmite soldiers, washed down with a cappuccino. And I have a veggie curry about once a week. The next day, I fry it up as Bubble and Squeak. Bubble and Squeak is a kind of a very English, maybe British thing, which involves taking leftover vegetables and frying them until they start to make a bubbling and squeaking sound when you fry them. Okay? He said, so the next day, I have veggie curry once a week. Next day, I fry it up as Bubble and Squeak because my appetite's half English and I'm half English too. Dance with me to this very English melody, from Morris dancing to Morrissey. All that stuff came from across the sea. Morris dancing is old-fashioned English dancing. Morrissey, the lead singer of the formerly lead singer of the Smiths, who you know, he's been on the podcast. Anyway, not personally, but I've talked about him on the podcast. Britannia, she's half English. She speaks Latin at home. St. George was born in the Lebanon. How he got here, I don't know. And those three lions on your shirt, they never sprang from England's dirt. Them lions are half English, and I'm half English too. You note that Billy Bragg says them lions, not those lions. Sometimes you see or hear them being used instead of those. It's a sort of colloquialism. Lots of people do it. Billy Bragg's from Essex. He's, you know, it's fairly common of the sort of typical Essex dialect that they would say them lions instead of those lions. Oh, my country, what a beautiful country you are. Let's hear Billy Bragg playing us that tune. So this was recorded live, and it's Billy Bragg and the... What's the name of his band? We'll see in a second.
2, 3, 4... of Marmite soldiers washed down with a cappuccino. And I have a veggie curry about once a week. The next day I fry it up as bubble and squeak, cause my appetite's half English and I'm half English too. Hey! She's half English. She speaks Latin at home. And St. George was born in the Lebanon. How he got here, I don't know. And those three lions on your shirt, they never sprung from England's dirt. Them lions are half English, and I'm half English too. Them lions are half English, and I'm half English too.
That was Billy Bragg and the Blokes, and that is the sound of English folk music, and I love it. It makes me feel proud, actually, to hear it. It's just strong and melodic, and wow, it's great. I love it when I'm in a pub in England and there's folk music being played, and I have a few beers, and it's really an incredible experience. I mean, normally when I listen to music, I listen to stuff with a sort of American flavor or influenced by, you know, like Latin music or whatever, stuff that you can dance to. But then when I hear traditional English folk music, it's just, it goes sort of right into the heart of my soul, you know? All right. I think I'm going to wind this up now. And I'm going to stop talking about this subject because I think I've dealt with it, right? But I have to conclude. I have to just read the last... concluding paragraphs of this podcast, all right? So just bear with me. These are the closing minutes of the episode now, all right? As ever, I'm very curious to know what your responses are to all of this. I record this just in front of the computer. You're not there in front of me. When I have students in front of me and we're talking about this kind of thing, half the time I'm encouraging them to talk and I want to know what they think and I'm encouraging them to give their input and so on. It's not just me talking. And I can't obviously do that on the podcast, but you can comment. You can put your comments on the website. So I'm very curious to know your thoughts on this. But let me just conclude in some way. So Britishness, like any cultural identity, is always changing. These things never stay the same. There's always a sense that the culture is being lost. And that's just the sense of the present order slipping away and being replaced by the new one. And at every moment of every minute, things are changing and nothing will stay the same. That brings some sense of fear and panic. The idea that we're going to lose the good things we have. People also need a clearly defined culture in order to feel secure. So they know where they are and that they can trust the people around them. People tend to prefer the things that they know and distrust the things that they don't. It's quite easy to blame others for that frightening sense that things are changing for the worse. I think this is why a lot of people have fear and hatred of immigrants and foreigners. They're scared of the unknown agents of change who look and behave differently. I suppose it's human nature to be like that, but it's also a little sad and unnecessary when it ends up in violence and suffering. Obviously, we shouldn't tolerate certain behaviour. Where am I going with this? What am I trying to say? What I mean is that there's no such thing as true Britishness unless it is just a snapshot of what is happening right at this moment in Britain. And when I talk about the violence and stuff, I'm talking about, you know, the nationalist movement, sort of fascism and that kind of thing, which is, you know, a living threat to our way of life, isn't it? This is all very serious. But anyway, what is going on? What are most people thinking and doing? It's almost impossible to comprehend the subtlety of what Britishness really is at any moment, and not just Britishness, but any place, because it's so complex. That's why the question invites the standard mind-numbing responses like, it's the Queen, it's tea, it's strawberry jam, it's Monty Python, it's a game of cricket, it's 9 pints of lager and a fight outside the chip shop. People just list things like that because they associate with the UK because there's no other way of really explaining it. Just a bunch of associations. Britishness or national identity is negotiated, I think. Also, I believe that Britishness is not an absolute concept. It's something which is negotiated. Everyone has their own version of Britishness. And in fact, Britishness changes depending on who is in power, who's got the money, the influence, and the cultural capital. In the end, it doesn't matter how much you say that Britishness is all about cricket when hardly anyone plays cricket anymore because there's no money in it. So you can bang on about defining Britain, Britishness, but ultimately it's going to be defined by the people who live in the country. Britishness is a blanket term which is supposed to incorporate all the diverse elements of multiculturalism. It means diversity, inclusivity, and a celebration of the success and positivity of multiculturalism. So in that sense, Britishness is something which is supposed to unify us, provide us with a sense of pride and therefore duty and obligation to the country we belong to. We're less likely to smash the system if we believe in it. So it's a unifying force which helps the country operate. Britishness is, as I said, it's a unifying force which just keeps everything together. After the 2005 terror attacks, so that was there were Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks in London. After the 2005 terror attacks, the government were keen to reinforce national pride, to promote the British brand to its own people in an effort to fight back against the destructive forces behind the attacks. The idea of a Britishness Day was suggested, but it didn't really go anywhere. But what could that be? What could a Britishness Day be? A day when we argue about what Britishness is? Also, it's all a bit close to nationalism, and we don't like that in the UK, really. Nobody wants to be associated with fascism, so often people have a defensive attitude to national pride, usually along the lines of, I think it's fine to be proud of Britain. You know, people often say it like that. I think it's fine to be proud of Britain, like they're defending the idea. I am proud of Britain. So, you know, some people feel it's necessary to actually say, look, sorry, there's nothing wrong with being proud of being Britain. Often the comments are presented in that way. What about all the bad things done in the name of Britain? Are you proud of them too? Now, I know that there may be some listeners out there in some parts of the world who see Britain in fairly serious way. Like, for example, in the Middle East, I mean, you know, the UK was involved in dividing up the Middle East to an extent with things like the Balfour Declaration after World War One. After World War Two. Most people seem quite happy to pick and choose which aspects of Britain they're proud of. They usually will ignore the atrocities in our colonial past, proudly declaring their pride in English tea, despite the treatment of India during the colonial era. So I'm a bit wary of being too proud of my country because I know that what we've I know that we've done some pretty bad things in the past. Also, I think national pride can be blinding and ultimately quite destructive. It's good to be proud of your roots, but there is a more important thing to remember, that there is a bigger picture, and that is that it's basically stupid to think of one nationality, but it's stupid to think that one nationality is intrinsically better than others, because that's what everyone is thinking. Instead, this sounds like I'm a hippie or something. Instead, we just need to see ourselves as one consciousness, man. You can be whoever the hell you want to be as well. I believe it doesn't matter where you pay your taxes. You can just define your own identity as you see fit. Just as long as you don't go out of your way to hurt other people, just go ahead and be whatever you like. That's the main thing for me. Just try and be a good person. The rest of it is just fluff. And I know that being a good person isn't as easy as that, but, you know, because sure, you may not be hurting people directly, but what if you pay taxes to a government which then spends that money on weapons and instruments of torture? What then? Well, who knows? But I'm going to stick with that point. Just try to be a good person. The rest is just fluff. And that is the end of this episode of Luke's English Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I hope that you've managed to listen all the way to the end. If you have, then... That's a huge crowd of people clapping and applauding you. Well done. As ever, leave your comments on the page. You might want to check out audible.com as well. I know I keep mentioning this, but, you know, I've got a sponsorship deal going on with them. Not a massively lucrative one. But anyway, every now and then I will say to you, check out audibletrial.com/teacherluke. Because you can get a free audiobook, which isn't bad. There's a page on my website that explains everything. teacherluke.co.uk/audible. All right? Great. Thanks a lot for listening. And I hope you're having a good time wherever you are. This has been an emotional experience. It hasn't really. It's been fairly normal. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. Thanks for listening. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.